Melissa Fenley and dancers are at the Joyce this week celebrating the theater's 25th anniversary season, and they're performing the world premiere of Calculus and Politics with music by Harry Parch. The engagement also includes the New York premiere of Dreaming Awake and the classic piece Providence Unknown, both with music by Philip Glass. Performances run until December 16th, and I'm very pleased to welcome both Melissa Fenley and Philip Glass to this show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Leonard.
Philip, last night you performed the original compositions, Dreaming Awake and Providence Unknown, for opening night. Do you perform generally? Do you like to perform your own composition?
I do a lot. I do a lot of performing, but not that much like performing with dance. I do a lot with Melissa. We go back a long time in performing. We've toured a lot together. But I do a lot of concertizing, but doesn't include dance. Dance is a tricky business. For example, that little bit of music you just played, in the live performance, I have to play it slower.
Mm-hmm.
So that and I have to be.
Otherwise, the dancers have heart attacks.
They bump into each other. They bump into each other. It's even
worse. They don't, Philip.
But they could bump into you because you're on the stage. Is it distracting at all to have people flying by?
He's barricaded by his big piano.
Unfortunately, this is a piece I visually am not so familiar with because it's a new piece. The other piece that I did, we've done it a lot of times, and I can look at the stage and I can see where the dancers are and where Melissa is, and I know where we are supposed to be and whether I'm fast ahead or behind them, and I can adjust. I don't know this piece well enough to adjust to it, so I'm still, you know, matching it with the dance is still new for me.
And composed specifically for the company?
No, this wasn't. And generally speaking, dancers find music that they love. For example, the Harry Parch piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That piece Harry Parch died in 1974, so I don't think you commissioned that.
No, I did not.
But dancers are one of the great the community that supports new music more than any other community. And dancers paw through new music and find pieces that they love and bring them to the public in a way that no one else can do.
Is that what happened with you with the Harry Parch piece?
The Harry Parch piece was actually commissioned by a gentleman named John Schneider years ago. I worked on it, made a piece, and then now at the Joyce, I've reconfigured that and actually done a lot of totally new choreography so that this is a world premiere of a third variation, actually. So it's all these different variations that have combined into a new piece.
Well, you can have Philip perform live for you, but the Parch piece could not be performed live because it not only requires so many instruments.
Yes, it's a
huge. And many of them were handmade by Harry Parch himself.
He made all
they're
the instruments,
in
right.
Museums. In some cases, they're falling apart, as I understand.
Well, I think that actually the University of New Jersey in Montclair has all the originals. In fact, they just did a performance at the Japan Society the other evening.
Now, is he a composer you admired? Because I can see certain things where you'd be sympathetic.
I do admire him. And in fact, I was telling Melissa that in 1957 or 58, I saw a performance of The Bewitched at Juilliard, where I was a student, and Parch came and presented it himself there. And it was the first time I had seen something that radical, and it was inspiring to see music, and it was a theater piece.
And his brother was also radical. He was one of the most famous cartoonists of the time, Virgil Parks. And he was the first cartoonist to put two eyes on one side of a...
I didn't know that was his brother.
Picasso style.
Yes. Yeah, Vip.
Well, you can say that Harry Parch put two eyes on one side and music did. That is a good description of what he did.
Your dance company is celebrating its 30th anniversary,
That's
Melissa.
Right, yes.
You must have started it when you were 12 years old.
No, not quite. I was actually, it was in 1977, and I'm now 53.
So you're still very young. You
yes, and I still dance.
23 years old.
I still dance in every piece.
And many choreographers continue to dance. Twyla Tharp, Mark mm-hmm. Morris, Tricia Brown. I remember Eric Hawkins coming here before he died, and he was still engaged. Is something it's just difficult to give up?
Not really. I think what it is that the dance that a choreographer makes is so embodied within their own particular musical instrument that they ultimately do it the best of anybody, even as they age.
But I can't imagine a playwright insisting. I mean, we'd have Tom Stoppard in all of his plays. And
no, it's a very, very different medium, absolutely.
And can you imagine doing this for forever until, like Merce Cunningham, your body says you can't do this anymore?
Yeah, and then he figures out a new way to do it on the computer. I mean, it's just, it's a great life pursuit.
Now, what happens when you're looking for other dancers? Are you, do you look for dancers who have can do the sorts of things your body can do?
Mm-hmm. I have a very wonderful dance company right now, 10 dancers, and 6 of them are new for this particular season. Found them sort of word of mouth. They came in to audition for me. And, you know, when you're finding a new dancer, you have several things you're working with. Firstly, are they nice people? Do you want to be around them all day long? Secondly, can they do the movement? Can they think? I mean, the Harry Parch piece in particular is very, very rhythmic, very difficult rhythmic configurations. So there's all that. And the company that I have is marvelous in that sense.
But you can't maintain a company year after year because of the economics of dance.
No. I work as a sort of project to project.
It's almost like you have a pickup band and you
exactly.
just
have, you get move, on the back
Phil,
of the
I'm
wagon.
Sure you've had that experience where well, you've moved to another town and suddenly you have a new French horn player.
Well, my ensemble has been around a long time too. But this brings up an interesting point. My ensemble actually is getting younger now because as some older people retire, I bring in younger people. And what's very interesting for me now, and this is the first time it's happened really, there's a young generation of performers who are playing my music, and not quite the way I did it. And that, I could say, I've seen that in dance, too. And what Melissa said, of course, is she builds the pieces on her own body, and then another body has to do it. And they aren't exactly the same, and yet the differences can be very appealing.
Well, I'm sure that if Martha Graham could come back and see the way some of her things are being performed, she'd be slightly surprised. But what happens when somebody's playing one of your pieces
it
and it's
on
not
it
like,
is.
You know, it's a Bach probably would be stunned by the way he's played
well,
these
I'll
days.
I'll give you a good example. There's a group called Icebreaker who just did a performance of music with changing parts, which I wrote in 1970, and they sent me a tape of it. And I liked it so much that we put it out on my record label.
Mm. But it's not. But it's not the way you would have performed it.
Absolutely not. They
and yet, it's from the same notation.
I think they played it better.
Really?
Don't forget when we did it in 1970, 71, 72. By 73, we weren't playing anymore. In those years, we could barely play it. This was a new language. We were struggling to master a new language, and then we moved on to other things: music with 12 parts, and music and Einstein on the Beach, and so forth. And what's happened now? There's a new generation of players this must happen in dance also. Every new language has a new performance style. And if there wasn't a new performance practice to go with it, it wouldn't be a new language. That's how we know it's new, because we have to find a new way of playing. Is that true for dance as well?
Well, when I first started out, the whole thing that was new about my work is that it had a continuousness to it. So a dancer doing it had to have enormous cardiovascular energy and reservoir.
They weren't going to go
and
up
that,
and catch
that was
their
very
breaths
new.
For a while.
I mean, I was training myself by running long distance.
I remember seeing your early performances, and it was literally breathtaking. We couldn't believe that you could run around for long and for so fast.
We just reconstructed hemispheres, which
that's
one of
the
those
piece
early
I'm thinking
pieces.
Of.
Yeah.
With that,
and,
Anthony?
With Anthony Davis. I made that in 1983, and we did it again 2 years ago. And, you know, at the age of 51, I'm dancing this piece that I made when I was 28 or whatever. And it was just, it was amazing to get to that level again. So interesting.
When I first saw Melissa's work in the late 70s, I saw it a little before that. It was astonishing. I'd never seen anyone move so beautifully and so energetically. And I wasn't even sure it was dance. I thought it looked so athletic. And after all, I got used to the movement and the energy, and then I began to see it the way I believe that she meant it.
Well, how much has your background influenced your approach to dance? You were born in Las Vegas, but you were raised in Nigeria and Spain.
Yeah, lived in Nigeria from the age of 6 to 16, and saw an enormous amount of Yoruba dance. You lived in the Abadan area. And I think the influence there was that dance, firstly, happened all day long. It wasn't a particular event. And when ceremonies were going on, they went on for days on end. So there was this, people just danced for hours upon hours upon hour. And I think that was a huge influence for me to think that part of the dance experience was to start off in it and then progress metabolically through a long period of time. So that the dance itself is not only the watching of it, but it's a sort of experiential doing of it.
The titles of these dances, Calculus and Politics, for example, is rather odd, but also, Dreaming Awake, I guess, is something I can understand a little more easily. How do you come up with the names?
Well, Calculus and Politics was actually taken from Parch's piece. It's called Castor and Pollux.
Ah, a pun.
And we were working on it, and one day in the rehearsal, and one of the dancers said, "Oh my gosh, it's just like calculus. I just, you know, the putting together all the different rhythms and counting systems." So we started calling it Calculus. And then Pollux became Politics because there's two parts of politics. There's the female all trio women, and then there's the male quartet. So we started laughing about how it was Obama versus Hillary, and we called it politics. But then we also referred to politics in the sense of being sort of ethical. I mean, the thing that you want to show in a performance should, in a way, echo what your particular ethics are.
How long will you be performing something new like Calculus and Politics or Dreaming Awake before it just becomes part of the repertoire?
It'll become part of the repertoire come Sunday, December 16th. I mean,
Something,
yeah.
You won't keep on doing it this whole year?
Oh, that's what I mean by repertoire, right. Is that it becomes something that then is in the reservoir of dances that we pull out when a performance comes up.
Mm. No, yeah. But I mean, I'm sure that when it's new, you want to do it all the time. And then somewhere along the line, it's something that you say, as you were talking before,
well,
about
yeah,
an early
that,
piece, oh, well, let's bring that back and see
away,
how
yes.
it works now.
I could say something about Dreaming Awake, if I may, because that was actually my title. And I told Melissa after the performance last night, I said, I now know why the piece is so hard to remember and why I called it Dreaming Awake. It's in 18 parts with 10 cadences.
Whoa, you did that to yourself.
I did it to myself, Leonard. I don't know why I did. And the you have to pay absolute attention to what you're doing or you get lost. It's like being in a house of mirrors.
Do you enjoy the collaborative aspect of this?
I do.
Because you've
collaborated
with Robert Wilson, and of course you've done Mabu Mines
and all of those movie scores. I've done also dance with Lucinda Charles. And Lucinda Charles and Melissa are the ones I've done a lot of work with, and Susan Marshall also. But I especially like dance, and dancers have been attracted to my music, and I've become almost ubiquitous in there's a lot of my music around in the dance world.
Because it has a strong rhythmic pulse.
It does, and I think there's a mutual admiration between myself and the dance world. And I feel very comfortable in that world, and I like working in it.
Mm-hmm. In the Parch piece, you have stuffed swans, you have jump ropes, expanding the whole idea of dance. Do you think dance is more and more that? Recently, I've been seeing a lot of dancers doing a lot of talking,
with things,
for
with
example.
Props. Well, yeah, I just thought it was an interesting thing to pull in some elements that were maybe perhaps more theatrical. And it comes again from the idea of Castor and Pollux being the twins of Leda and the Swan. So that consequently the swans, and then it sort of deals with the idea of Swan Lake. I mean, swans in dance and ballet have a very revered place. So there was that. And the jumping rope comes because Pollux was a great boxer, so it's sort of like something about boxing training.
You must be thrilled that there's a place like the Joyce Theater here in New York.
Oh, the Joyce is a beautiful place to dance.
It is?
It's built for dancers. The floor is gorgeous. You know, it's the type of floor you get on, you go, oh, thank goodness. You know, you can jump, and it has a beautiful spring, and everyone in the place is there about making your performance the best it can possibly be. Very, very professional.
And the acoustics, everybody hears your piano on the background.
You know, another thing is that the stage is very big, and the audiences are very close to the stage. And above all, it's an intimate space. And yet, what is it? Is it about 400 or 500 people there?
It's 500, yeah. 500, just under 500.
It makes 500 people seem very close to you. It's excellent.
I remember when it was a movie theater.
Yes, that's right, the Elgin.
Yeah. And now it's the Joyce Theater on 8th Avenue and 19th Street. Yeah. And you can see every night, is it?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Until December 18th, Philip Glass.
16th.
Oh, 16th, that's right. Mm-hmm. I just misread that. Melissa Finley and Philip Glass performing...
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that Linda Shelton has been an inspiration in the way she has brought companies in and commissioned works, and she's just an ideal leader in the dance world, in my mind.
I agree, we're so pleased that it's reached 25. And you've reached 30.
Yes.
Wow. And Phil, I'm not going to ask you how many years.
Yeah, no, I'm shy.
Thank you both so much, Melissa Finley and Philip Glass. And if you can, run down to the Joyce to see the Melissa Finley and dancers and Philip Glass.